Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Book 3, Chapter 30. How those are to be admonished who do not abstain from the sins which they bewail, and those who, abstaining from them, do not bewail them. Differently to be admonished are those who lament their transgressions, and yet do not forsake them, and those who forsake them, and yet do not lament them. For those who lament their transgressions, and yet forsake them not, are to be admonished to learn to consider anxiously that they cleanse themselves in vain by their weeping, if they wickedly defile themselves in their living, seeing that the end for which they wash themselves in tears is that when clean, they may return to filth. For hence it is written, "The dog is returned to his own vomit again, and the sow that was washed to her wallowing in the mire." For the dog, when he vomits, certainly casts forth the food which weighs upon his stomach. But when he returns to his vomit, he is again loaded with what he had been relieved from. And they who mourn their transgressions certainly cast forth by confession the wickedness with which they have been evilly satiated, and which oppressed the inmost parts of their soul. And yet, in recurring to it after confession, they take it in again. But the sow, by wallowing in the mire when washed, is made more filthy. And one who mourns past transgressions yet does not forsake them, subjects himself to the penalty of more grievous sin, since he both despises the very pardon which he might have won by his weeping, and, as it were, rolls himself in miry water, because in withholding purity of life from his weeping, he makes even his very tears filthy before the eyes of God. Hence again it is written, "Do not repeat a word in thy prayer." For to repeat a word in prayer is, after bewailing, to commit what again requires bewailing. Hence it is said through Isaiah, "Wash yourself, be clean." For he neglects being clean after washing, whoever after tears does not keep innocence of life. And they therefore are washed, but are in no way clean, who do not cease to bewail the things they have committed, but commit again things to be bewailed. Hence, through a certain wise man it is said, "He that is baptized from the touch of a dead body, and touches it again, what does his washing avail? For indeed, he is baptized from the touch of a dead body, who is cleansed from sin by weeping. But he touches a dead body after his baptism, who after tears repeats his sin." Those who bewail transgressions yet do not forsake them are to be admonished to acknowledge themselves to be before the eyes of the strict judge, like those who, when they come before the face of certain men, fawn upon them with great submission, but when they depart, atrociously bring upon them all the enmity and hurt that they can. For what is weeping for sin, but exhibiting the humility of one's devotion to God? And what is doing wickedly after weeping, but putting in practice arrogant enmity against him to whom entreaty has been made? This James attests, who says, "Whoever will be a friend of this world becomes the enemy of God." Those who lament their transgressions, yet forsake them not, are to be admonished to consider anxiously that, for the most part, bad men are unprofitably drawn by compunction to righteousness, even as, for the most part, good men are, without harm, tempted to sin. Here indeed is found a wonderful measure of inward disposition in accordance with the requirements of desert, in that the bad, while doing something good, but still without perfecting it, are proudly confident in the midst of the very evil which, even to the full, they perpetrate, while the good, when tempted of evil, to which they in no way consent, plant the steps of their heart toward righteousness through humility, all the more surely from their tottering through infirmity. Thus Balaam, looking on the tents of the righteous, said, May my soul die the death of the righteous, and may my last end be like theirs. But when the time of compunction had passed, he gave counsel against the life of those to whom he had requested for himself to be like even in dying. And when he found an occasion for the gratification of his avarice, he straightway forgot all that he had wished for himself of innocence. Hence it is that Paul, the teacher and preacher of the Gentiles, says, I see another law in my members, warring against the law of my mind, and bringing me into captivity to the law of sin, which is in my members. He is of a truth tempted for this very purpose, that he may be the more steadfastly confirmed in good from the knowledge of his own weakness. Why is it, then, that the one is touched with compunction, and yet does not draw near unto righteousness, while the other is tempted, and yet sin does not defile him? But for this evident reason, that neither do good things not perfected help the bad, nor bad things not consummated condemn the good. But on the other hand, those who forsake their transgressions and yet do not mourn them are to be admonished not to suppose the sins to be already remitted, which, though they do not multiply them by action, they still do not cleanse away by bewailings. For neither has a writer, when he has ceased from writing, obliterated what he has written by reason of his having added no more. Neither has one who offers insults made satisfaction by merely holding his peace, it being certainly necessary for him to impugn his former words of pride by words of subsequent humility. Nor is a debtor absolved by not increasing his debt, unless he also pays the debt that he has incurred. Thus also, when we offend against God, we by no means make satisfaction by ceasing from iniquity, unless we also follow up the pleasures which we have loved by lamentations set against them. For if no sin of deed had polluted us in this life, our very innocence would by no means suffice for our security as long as we live here, since many unlawful things would still assail our hearts. With what conscience, then, can he feel safe who, having perpetrated iniquities, is himself witness to himself that he is not innocent? For it is not as if God were fed by our torments, but he heals the diseases of our transgressions by medicines countering them, that we, who have departed from him delighted by pleasures, may return to him embittered by tears, and that, having fallen by running loose in unlawful things, we may rise by restraining ourselves even in lawful ones, and that the heart, which mad joy had flooded, may be burnt clean by wholesome sadness, and that what the elation of pride had wounded may be cured by the dejection of a humble life. For hence it is written, I said unto the wicked, Do not deal wickedly, and to the transgressors, Do not lift up the horn. For transgressors lift up the horn, if they in no way humble themselves to penitence after knowledge of their iniquity. Hence again it is said, A bruised and humble heart God does not despise. For whoever mourns his sins, yet does not forsake them, bruises indeed his heart, but scorns to humble it. But he who forsakes his sin, yet does not mourn them, does indeed already humble his heart, but refuses to bruise it. Hence Paul says, and such indeed were you. But you are washed, but you are sanctified. Because in truth, amended life sanctifies those whom the ablution of the affliction of tears cleanses through penitence. Hence Peter, when he saw some affrighted by consideration of their evil deeds, admonished them, saying, Repent, and be baptized, every one of you. For being about to speak of baptism, he spoke first of the lamentations of penitence, that they should first bathe themselves in the water of their own affliction, and afterwards wash themselves in the sacrament of baptism. With what conscience, then, can those who neglect to weep for their past misdeeds live secure of pardon, when the chief pastor of the church himself believed that penitence must be added even to this sacrament, which chiefly extinguishes sins? End of chapter 30.